It is June 2nd, 2010, and my name is Bob Himstock, and I'm sitting in the beautiful home of David and Jackie Frommer here in Mill Valley, and they have been very generous with their time to help me with this oral history project. And I have known David since the early 70s. David and Jackie, and am looking forward to exploring their lives here in Mill Valley. Thank you for agreeing to help me with this project, David and Jackie.
Thank you very much.
It's very nice that you thought of us.
We're very grateful to you.
I'm volunteering with the Mill Valley Library History Room and working with their oral history project. So today's interview is going to be grounded in your life in Mill Valley, not focused too much on our common interest of coaching soccer and playing soccer. That's certainly a huge part for both of us here. But very interested in how you came upon Mill Valley, how you heard about it, why you moved here, and everything. So, but could you both give me a little bit of information on your life before moving to Mill Valley?
Be very happy to. To begin with, I was born July 21st, 1942, in Chicago, Illinois. Lived there for about 7 years. Then our family moved to New Mexico, Clovis, New Mexico, for a little less than a year. And in 1950, we moved to San Francisco, where we lived till 1974. And then we moved to Mill Valley. And I was born with wonderful parents, Catherine, who was a school teacher and a musician and a school director, and my dad, Irving Frommer, who was an architect and an artist, painter, graphic artist, and both of them were very active in civil rights and in peace and in socially conscious movements. They were both very musical. They loved folk music, and so we grew up in an atmosphere with lots of folk singing. I met Jackie in 1964. Interestingly, I was attending an adult ed class in San Francisco. Her mother was enrolled in the class and invited her to come and join the class. It was taught by a teacher who she had known and who was very inspiring to Jackie previously. So she came to the class and met me there. And in the fall of 1964, we proceeded to have picnics and strummed guitars and talked about our favorite blues musicians and folk artists, and during that time I was in a folk trio which had just started and was to have two wonderful, amazing years of musical adventure. And so perhaps I'm jumping ahead in my life story a little bit, but going back a little bit, I grew up in San Francisco from 1950 on, and we lived in the Richmond District out in the fog, and I went to Argonne, then Presidio Middle School or Junior High School, and then Washington High School. And Jackie was also at Washington High School, although she grew up in the Sunset District.
And across the park from each other on 20th. I was on 20th and Judah. He was on 20th and
Cabrillo.
But
yeah.
We didn't.
As 11-year-old, I was on 41st Avenue.
Oh, really?
41st
oh.
and Lockton.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And went to
mm-hmm.
Lincoln High eventually.
Mm-hmm. My sister went to Lincoln.
Yeah. And so I had a younger brother, Jonathan, or John Frommer, who is has been and is now a wonderful musician and is also a producer of television programs for KQED. And he was 3 years younger. He was a very capable soccer player who was on the United States Open Cup champion team from San Francisco Athletic Club in 1976. And he was also an alternate on the United States Olympic team in 1972.
And he lives in Mill Valley also.
He lives in Mill Valley also on Morning Sun. I had, in addition to John, who was 3 years younger than me, I had a sister, Anne, who was 3 years older, and she married Eugene Spake, and they have lived in the Tam Valley area of Mill Valley for many years. So, getting back to my life story, I was very very scholarly and studied very hard in school and loved athletics, although I had not played any organized sports until I was almost 14. But in San Francisco, soccer was a unique part of the boys' athletic picture in the middle schools or the junior high schools. Such soccer activists as Steve Negoesco and others had succeeded in getting soccer as one of the four sports that boys could play interscholastically in junior high school. So I wanted to try all the sports. I tried track and basketball and baseball and soccer. Someone had told me that since I kicked a ball pretty far in kickball and I was on the track team as a sprinter, that maybe soccer could be a game for me. And of course, when I started it out in 1956 as a 13-year-old, it was like unlocking a mystery the first season. I would run and run and run for miles in the midfield without touching the ball because I would chase it wherever it went. And during the off season, I was led to Steve Negoesco, who had a club team. And suddenly the light bulbs above my head started to go on, and I discovered passing and the team beauty of the game. And I stayed with Steve Negoesco pretty much throughout my whole soccer career. When I went back to the Midwest to go to college in the early to mid 60s, I came back and rejoined the teams that Steve Negoesco was coaching. So a wonderful thing happened in relation to that club team. I was playing with a team called Mercury Athletic Club, and we were sort of in the West Coast Championship in 1960 and lost in LA. But then in 1961, during the summer, when I was just turning 19, our under-19 boys team beat LA 3-0 down there, beat a very powerful St. Louis team 2-0 in San Francisco, and then went back east to play Philadelphia on their home field in 104-degree temperature, 98 mm-hmm. relative humidity. We were essentially a group of middle class and lower middle class and poor kids gathered together from different parts of the city, probably about two-thirds Latino. We were told we didn't have a prayer and that the championship was a foregone conclusion for the East Coast team. We went back there and we won 2-0, and that was the first youth team to win any soccer championship, boys or girls, west of the Mississippi. And to this day, it's the only national championship youth soccer team ever from San Francisco. So we sort of put the West Coast on the map, and we had a wonderful time doing it, and we made lifelong friendships and had an amazing experience playing together under Steve. And Steve went on to win numerous national championships at USF, but this was his first coaching national championship in summer of 1961. Shortly after that, and I should go back a few steps soccer-wise and just say that I was athletically active at Washington High School. I threw the shot put on the track team, and I was third in Northern California in my junior year in shot put, and all city all 3 years at Washington High School. But most of all, I loved my classes, I loved my teachers, and I loved to be athletic. When I graduated, I went to Cal Berkeley for a year, and since the NCAA rule required that all freshmen play JV, I played JV soccer at Cal for a year, and we were undefeated. And then I went to San Francisco City College, and we were undefeated in the same conference with Cal, Stanford, and USF. And so with a number of top 15 Division I teams in our conference, we were the conference champion. And after a year at City College, I had a hankering for adventure and wanted to see what Wisconsin was like. My parents had met there, and I was attracted to the Midwest, and so went back to Wisconsin and went to school there. I helped start the intramural program.
How long did you go to school there?
I went there for 2 years, and then I came back, and it's an interesting story. I'd never graduated from Wisconsin, because when I was at Wisconsin, I took a bus down to Chicago every weekend to play for Schwaben FC, a soccer team, primarily German team, which won the U.S. Amateur Cup, and went to Germany to play. And in order to go with the team to play in Germany, I had to take incompletes because we left in late May. And so I had this wonderful experience of playing soccer in Germany with Schwaben from Chicago, then came back and came home for the summer in 64 and was singing in at a folk sing with my brother and a friend, Albert Robinson, who had thrown shot put with me at Washington High School, and who loved to make music. And someone heard us and scooped us up and made a folk trio out of us in no time at all. We were auditioning at the Hungry Eye and offered a 7-year contract with the managers of the Kingston Trio. And we turned that down, and shortly thereafter we were auditioning at a little club in San Francisco, and someone from Mercury Records had flown out from named Jack Tracy from the Midwest and offered us a contract with Mercury Records. And my college career was interrupted by this fantastic opportunity to be a performing musician. And so suddenly, without having performed at any club, we were in the middle of the Henry Mancini show with audiences of 16,000 to 18,000 in huge arenas. We went on a tour and went to Tulsa Civic Auditorium, Houston Civic Auditorium, Des Moines, Iowa, Chicago, and then we had engagements with the Henry Mancini's orchestra in Seattle and in Portland, and Corvallis and Eugene. So suddenly my life was changed. I had to decide between going back to Wisconsin to finish up or to explore this incredible opportunity. And so my brother and my friend Albert and I, in a folk trio called Jonathan, David, and Albert, were recording an album in Hollywood. We performed with John Denver at the Troubadour in Hollywood, and cut an album with Glenn Campbell accompanying us as our backup guitarist. And then we're enticed to move to Chicago because we were told that a manager there, Frank Fried, was very interested in signing us to a contract. We ended up living in Chicago for a month or two in the spring of 1965, and my brother and Albert had gone to Selma, Alabama, to march in the historic Civil Rights March, and they came up from that Civil Rights March to debut at a club called Mother Blues in Chicago. We were asked to move to Chicago after our stint at the club there. And so I had a very pivotal question in my life. If we were going to move from San Francisco to Chicago to follow our musical dreams, should I call Jackie, whom I'd fallen in love with in the fall of 64, and invite her to move out to live with us in a big seven-room apartment in Old Town, or near Old Town in Chicago. So, obviously, it was a Hobson's choice. I couldn't resist, and I gave her a call on a Sunday morning and asked her if she could move out and join us.
Move out to Chicago.
Yes. She did, and we had a wonderful year there in the summer of 65 and fall of 65 until the summer of 66. Joni Mitchell, on a couple of occasions, spent the weekend at our place making music with us all night and sharing all kinds of stories and songs. We played regularly in a club, and we took part-time jobs, and we also enrolled at Roosevelt University there because the Vietnam War was on, and the draft was very solicitous. We were in need of going to college and getting a student deferment so that we could continue to explore our musical fortunes. And
well, one thing could I say, the reason that the manager, Frank Fried, at that exact time when they had been ready to sign with him, shifted careers and became like a Bill Graham type mm-hmm. promoter and brought the Beatles to this country. So that, you know, create a sudden dramatic shift in his career. And so I got to go and see the Beatles the first time they played in Chicago at the Comiskey Park, although I couldn't hear a word because of the mm-hmm. screaming and the noise. But it did impact their career because he dropped all of the people that he was managing and went full-time into promoting. Mm-hmm. And so they suddenly were there in Chicago without that management and direction and, you know, and being young and inexperienced. So it was like starting at the top and then starting over again.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was born in San Francisco in 1942, October, so I'm a little bit younger, a few months. And my parents were both born in San Francisco. My paternal grandfather had come to San Francisco in 1908 after the earthquake and fire because there was work there and he was a builder. And so He actually built some of the, he was a contractor on some of the apartment buildings that are still standing in the Marina District. And so that's how my parents ended up there. And I was born there, went all through school there. Also went to Washington High School, although David and I kind of knew each other from a distance, but not really personally. And then after we graduated, I got interested in folk music, but he was off at Wisconsin, so I didn't meet him. I met his brother through the San Francisco Folk Music Club, and I knew of David because he'd been very involved in high school as a class officer, an athlete, and so I asked about him, and his brother John and I became friends through the Folk Music Club. And then I had persuaded my mother to take this class at San Francisco State Extension from a professor that I just loved and who was very influential in my life. And so I went with her to visit, as David said, and he was the person that she had been telling me about that she'd become friends with in the class. So I said, but she had his name wrong, so I didn't recognize it. So that's how we had a friendship for quite a while first before we fell in love. And then I went to City College, and then I guess when we started going out, you were already involved in the music group. And so it was a big step for me to move to Chicago, but I eagerly did. And it was quite an experience living there in the early 60s.
Mid-60s.
Yeah. Did you work there?
Yeah, we worked at little shops. There was Wells Street in Chicago at that time was a very kind of up-and-coming sort of touristy folk music center. And there were a lot of little shops, and I got a job at a place called the Caravan, which had all kinds of imported things, you know, clothes and jewelry and just all different kinds of imports. And David worked two doors down at the Cook's Cupboard, which was a cookware store. And we lived in a house full of young people. We were sort of, even though we were just barely 20, I guess, we were the grown-ups in the house who felt a responsibility to pay the rent and take care of things, whereas the rest of them, it was kind of the beginning of the whole folk, hippie, psychedelic era. So
so you two started it all.
Yeah, we... yeah. So it was a very, very interesting time to be there and living in that environment. I also was very, very, it was very eye-opening too, because for me, one of the most dramatic experiences was I had grown up in San Francisco and really never lived anywhere else. And in Chicago, there was very, very open kind of, I would just say, government
corruption.
And it was so shocking to me because it was so extreme and blatant, and you know, people paid off the cops when they got stopped for traffic tickets, and people got harassed. But, you know, I just saw a part of life that I hadn't seen before. So that was...
My family has a farm in southern Illinois, and we have a little corporation, and we're dealing with the city since they need a portion of our land for roads, so they're taking it through eminent domain. And I could see some of the same things going on in southern Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really curious on how you found yourselves here in Mill Valley. Were you married here or married before you moved here? What is that story?
Okay. When the momentum of our folk music trio, Jonathan, David, and Albert, seemed to change, and we weren't progressing on a national level, we decided to come...
Partly because of the draft, of having to be in school and worry about being drafted.
Right. We were sort of anchored by having to go to school and have part-time jobs and so forth. So we came back in summer of 66 to San Francisco, and I went back to Wisconsin and was expecting to complete my studies there.
And I went to California College of Arts and Crafts in Oakland at that time.
Mm-hmm. But in the fall, I had to come back to San Francisco to go to court because I had filed for conscientious objector, and I wasn't accepted as a conscientious objector, and so I went to court to try to get the proper consideration of my my application for CO, and so in coming back to San Francisco in the fall, I reunited with Jackie, and which was wonderful, and then we decided to get married in January of 67, and we did, and then she came back to Wisconsin so that we could be there while I tried to complete my studies there. After a short time there, we decided to come back to San Francisco, but in the meantime, Reed, our first child, was born in the late summer of 67. We came back to San Francisco and moved into a house in the Coal Valley area on Clayton Street, and our years there from 67 or 68 until 74, when we moved to Mill Valley, our years there were very exciting for us. We had friends over all the time. We had lots of musical gatherings. I was teaching school, preschool, and also first grade, kindergarten, first grade. I was teaching music, and I was teaching guitar, and I was also teaching PE in schools. And but it was a very social time for us. So the neighborhood was full of wonderful people. We lived at, on Clayton between Carl and Parnassus in a beautiful big Victorian, and we always had a friend or two living in the basement or in the attic, including at one point my brother and his girlfriend and their pet rabbit, and lots of wonderful gatherings at our house, I continued to play soccer. I sort of resumed my soccer career, which had been dormant, and played for Steve Negoesco's teams in the men's league at Balboa Stadium. We moved to Mill Valley in 1974. And
the house we were living in was sold.
Right.
So we needed to move.
In San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And by that time, David's parents had moved to Mill Valley, and then after that, his sister and her family moved to Mill Valley. So that's how we got to know about Mill Valley, and we really liked it. We came over here and spent time with his family here, and just grew to love Mill Valley. So when we started looking for a place to live, it was natural to begin in Mill Valley. Although I think we looked all around Marin at first, but then.
Mm-hmm.
Did you move? Is this home, the first place
yes.
you moved?
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And we were shown a number of other places that the realtors considered might be the most appropriate choices for a young couple. But when we walked in the front door of this place and looked through the windows in the back and saw flowers everywhere and beautiful garden and trees, we were magnetically drawn to this house at 147 Elm Avenue. And
Reed was 7 years old and went to
mm-hmm.
school across the road at Park School.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
What could be better?
Right. Mm-hmm. And
and Rachel was three, and she we took her to the co-op, the Sausalito Co-op Nursery School. So she
mm-hmm.
started school there.
Mm-hmm. And we were here for a couple of years prior to my role in as a co-founder in starting the Mill Valley Soccer Club. And there was some soccer activity for youth here in Marin, but it wasn't highly organized. There were a few people, Eddie Arnold and Jim Whiteside and Rocky Welchick and my brother John Fromer, who coached, and one or two other people who were coaching locally. And there was a league called the Junior Soccer League of Marin, I believe. And I started coaching a team in that league when Reed was seven. And it was a team that had a number of players that went on to play very well for Tam High School and on the higher levels in the Bay Area. But at that time, things were somewhat random. Coaches who had children that were playing very often were inspired to take a team, but there wasn't a systematic kind of organization at all the age levels. And Dick Swain, who had been active particularly at Tam High and the Boosters and the Soccer Boosters, promoting the high school soccer program, Dick Swain and I and another fellow named Hayden McAfee met in early March at the Mill Valley Bakery, which was just down the street from the 7-Eleven and from the Mill Valley Coffee Shop. We met in the bakery and confirmed our desire to start a Mill Valley Soccer Club, and we said that it was time for us to get a program for our town. And so the three of us put out notices and circulated them at schools, and Dick Swain especially was active in inviting certain community people to be on the board, the very first board of the soccer club. And
what year was this?
1976.
Okay.
So the Mill Valley Soccer Club started in March of 1976, and it's the first season for the kids was in the fall of 1976. And at that time,
I would have guessed the Mill Valley Soccer Club, which always seemed during my years involved with the Tiburon Peninsula Soccer League, I always thought that Mill Valley came first and was always a few steps and generations ahead of Tiburon. But I moved to Mill Valley in 1982 after 8 years of being on the Tiburon board. So that means the Tiburon League was started in 1974. And mm-hmm. When did you say Mill Valley was started?
1976.
Boy.
But so there were teams that were coached in Mill Valley by different coaches, and they were teams that were affiliated for the most part with teams in the other parts of the county. And the Mayflower League, which was the adult league, consisted of a number of people who coached youth teams from San Rafael or Novato or other communities, including Mill Valley. There were also some options for local kids to play in San Francisco with a league there, I think perhaps the PAL league. We were somewhat separate from the other communities, and what united us was that one youth league in particular. And I wasn't aware of the development in Tiburon, but I would agree with you that once the Mill Valley Soccer Club got going for a number of years, we would think of ourselves as being somewhat exemplary and solid. And there were times when we perceived Tiburon to be similarly well organized, and there were other times when we were a little out of touch, out of sync with Tiburon, and there might become an issue which one community or other might have, which separated us briefly for a year or two. So it was
wasn't a primary difference between the structure of the two clubs was that were you called the Mill Valley Soccer Club from
mm-hmm.
day one,
mm-hmm.
and that was because you were looking to having adult teams be involved in the club as well as youth teams?
I'm very glad you asked that question, because it really, and I had forgotten to mention that, that really sort of brings up one of the things that we felt was unique about our Mill Valley Soccer Club, and that is that when we started, we had a vision of providing soccer for all levels of the community, from the youngest kids, some of whom enrolled in my Pee Wee soccer classes, which started at age 3, to seniors, to adults. So we had a women's team that grew out of a Tuesday morning class, which I was one of the coaches for, along with Connie Alm and some others, and later Ada Greenwood, many years later. But there was a women's team that developed, and a men's team. And the men's team was sort of very often supervised and cared for by Dick Swain and friends of his, colleagues of his, and his sons, Dick's sons, John and Paul and Phil Swain, and Matt Godino, and some other local youth, grew to become strong members of that men's team. And the men's team progressed from perhaps the fourth division, I'm not positive about that, from the third division to the second division to the first division to the majors. And in 6 seasons, it progressed 4 leagues up to reach the highest level. And so we had a men's team eventually that was one of the best 5 or 6 teams in Northern California. And we had a women's team which was very capable. They won a national tournament in their 2nd year of existence. And years later, when they left the Mill Valley Soccer Club, the women's team, because they felt that they weren't getting the kind of support that they had, or the collaboration that they had hoped for, because the Mill Valley Soccer Club was so focused on the youth program and somewhat oblivious of the men's and women's teams, which were founded to be an integral part of this whole community soccer program. The women's team shifted to San Francisco after many years of being under the banner of Mill Valley, and in their first year with the Vikings, that same team won the United States over 30 national championships. Mm-hmm. So both the men's and women's teams accomplished wonderful things, but were always on the back burner so far as the focus of the Mill Valley Soccer Club. And so many of the parents who were on the board were so concerned with the league, which was then primarily from September to early November, without a lot of other activities around the calendar year. The board members were so engaged with the kids program that they didn't realize how special it was to have adult teams. And I think that this, the Mill Valley Soccer Club's uniqueness in that area is a wonderful quality.
Mm-hmm. I seem to remember that the Tiburon League looked towards the Mill Valley League when we were having so many girls sign up, and in the early days the girls played with the boys on co-ed teams. There were so many girls signing up for soccer that there was a need for girls' teams, and neither of our leagues had enough girls to field enough girls' teams to have a league. So I think we sent, or we cooperated in starting up the first girls' division.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember
mm-hmm.
that?
Yeah, I do remember it because I was the most active person in advocating for the starting of a girls' league. And what happened in Mill Valley was that what we were discovering was that as the boys who played in the Mill Valley Soccer League were getting more and more years of experience, it became increasingly more challenging for girls to start out, particularly if they were starting out soccer at the age of 9 or 10 or 11 or 12, a number of them were hesitant to jump in to a co-ed league with boys who had been playing since they were 5 or 6. So as the co-ed league progressed from 1976 on, I started in the late 70s and early 80s suggesting very dramatically that we needed a girls' league, and for a few years it was postponed. It was sort of on the back burner. But in 1982, during the sixth year of the Mill Valley Soccer Club, we did get a girls' league started finally, and Julie Purcell, who is now Julie Althoff, and who is a school teacher at Old Mill School, she agreed to be the director of the girls' league in the first year, and she and I organized that, and then for a number of years after that, the girls' league grew, and I remember we did some very special things to try to build the popularity of soccer for the girls' league. One of the things I remember most vividly was going to Mill Valley Middle School with a couple of the women from the women's team and doing a demonstration of skills for the different PE classes, the girls' PE classes. And in our very first year of having the girls' league, we had 7, well, actually we only went up to under 12 the first year in the girls' league, but when we did form an under 14 a year later and went to middle school to demonstrate the sport, we had 70 plus girls sign up just from Mill Valley Middle School in the under 14 age group. And I have the list of the players who signed up on that. And
that's
so there was
amazing.
a tremendous response, partly because of our zeal and our excitement, our enthusiasm.
And because we had a daughter who was playing too. I think she started, I forget what age she was, but I saw such a shift in all of her friends who hadn't played any kind of organized sports and then all of a sudden were involved in this league, and could just see their confidence growing and how what an impact it had on them. It was very, very apparent.
Before the girls had their own league and their own teams, a girl would have to decide whether to play with the boys or not play at all.
Mm-hmm.
And this opened up the opportunity to play soccer to so many girls who did not want to play with the boys.
Right.
But I seem to remember that those girls who did play with the boys for years and years became very successful in high school and college
mm-hmm.
on all girls' teams. Did
mm-hmm.
you see that
mm-hmm.
in Mill Valley as well?
Yeah, I did see that as well. And when people asked me in sort of a pivotal moment whether I would recommend the Girls League for their daughter or the Co-Ed League, I wasn't really opinionated one way or the other. I thought that there were things to be gained for each. And of course, competing with the boys might have been the best choice for some of the most athletic or scrappier, feistier of the gals. But I thought that the benefits of having girls as teammates, all the support and the enthusiasm and all the kindred feelings of having a girls' team was a tremendous psychological and emotional boost for so many of the girls as well.
Now let's jump ahead to the year 2010, and after all these decades of you being involved in soccer in Mill Valley and Marin County with your successful soccer camps and your wonderful program for the little kids at Hockey Park, can you talk a little bit about the differences in soccer in 2010 compared to the early days?
Yeah, and some of it is more a matter of impressions than factual information. I have much more of a feeling of institutionalization now, of formality, of sort of commitments projected upon the kids from the parents, and less of a spontaneous, less of a an informal or less of a casual atmosphere. There have always been soccer players who have been very ambitious and very dedicated and aspiring, but the systematizing of programs and the degree of categorization and the emphasis on competitive levels has expanded so much lately that sometimes I wonder where all the informal opportunities for kids to just get together and play for fun. I wonder where those opportunities are in the bigger picture. And so I both applaud the growth of soccer and hold out a hope that there can be lots of programs where kids don't feel pressure from ambitious parents and so forth.
Or ambitious coaches. Or
Jackie, what's your viewpoint on this?
Well, I you know, I would say the same as David, that I'm judging it from somewhat of a distance, although we have three grandchildren who have gone through playing. The first two played at our oldest grandchild is 16 and a half, and she plays on the she played on the varsity team this year at San Rafael High School. Our grandchildren all live in San Rafael. And her younger brother is 12, and he's played soccer in Mill Valley up until a couple of years ago, and he's shifted to the Dixie League, and he's a really, really strong
player. That's Isaiah.
Isaiah. Mm-hmm. And he did play in the Under-9 Academy here in Mill Valley, but I think he had a good experience, but by the time he did that, he already was at the age of wanting to be with his school friends, and you know, so that's why they ended up shifting more towards San Rafael, so they could be with friends. What I did notice, this was something that I think in a way reflects what David is saying, when our granddaughter, who really loves soccer and is a skilled player in some ways, not a strong competitive player, but a very competent, knowledgeable player, played for San Rafael High in the JV team her first year as a freshman there. I noticed that their school was never considered one of the strong schools soccer-wise, and yet the kids seemed to be having so much fun. They just loved it.
Mm.
And even though they lost probably most of their games, they had such a great season. And what I found interesting, because we run an indoor league, and we've done that for 23, 24 years, however long, I still saw a lot of the parents who participate in our indoor league who had girls that same age as our
mm-hmm.
granddaughter who were playing in Mill Valley or at other schools around Marin, and I'd ask them if they were playing for their school. And I was very surprised at how many of those parents who had girls who played soccer all the way growing up and who were, you know, I knew they were good soccer players, and the parents said, oh, well, no, they didn't get chosen for the team, or I didn't want them to try out because it's too
mm.
competitive. And, or, you know, some of the really kids I knew were fairly good players spent the whole time on the bench. And there was just, and many of the schools seemed to be a more competitive attitude. And so I just found the value in seeing our granddaughter's experience, which I wouldn't have had if I hadn't, you know, been involved firsthand, that they had such a great time. Everybody participated. Everybody, you know, nobody sat on the bench. Everybody was a part of it, and they really felt like a team. And so I just thought that was a really valuable experience, and that, you know, I felt kind of sad that it doesn't seem to be that way everywhere, you know, kids. I know when David coached at Tam High, one of the things he decided from the very beginning was to never cut anyone who tried out for team.
Yeah, I remember his teams of 25 players.
Yeah, because he, even if he made two groups, he felt like that was an age where kids deserve to play if they want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I share that philosophy, and I think it's kind of moved away from that in the community or in the greater
community.
Yeah,
I don't think it's that way anymore. Mm-hmm. Back to the community, what changes have you seen in Mill Valley from the time when you moved here compared to today? The good changes, bad changes, how has the community changed?
Well, you know, at our age, we're at the age of our life where we're looking back sentimentally at all of the wonderful things that we remember from the past. So, of course, that skews your picture. I think it's become a much, much more affluent community than it was when we first moved here, when it seemed like when our kids were growing up, people had a lot more free time and weren't as busy and rushing and overextended. And it just seems like we had a lot of community. And, of course, part of that is our place in life. When our kids were young, we were always very involved in the schools and the sports and the community activities, and initiated a lot of community activities as well as participated in ongoing things. And for many years we put on this Mill Valley variety show that was intergenerational and had all kinds of, you know, it was at the Mount Carmel Auditorium. And so we were much, much more involved in feeling like a part of the community, and that there were a lot of community things. And I think partly because of the changes in the economy and how much people work and just our stage of life, that it feels like there's a lot less of that. And I hear it from other people yearning more for community, and life has changed for everybody, I think. Just
mm-hmm.
busier, you know, all of our friends who thought we'd be retired by this time are not. And
And I could echo what she's just said and just add that it does seem now that people are so aware of their financial pressures and their job pressures and their career condition that they don't have time to just relax and slow down and take time to socialize freely. Very often people schedule things but they have to check their calendars, and they are still concerned, have a lot of pressures, and are stressed in different ways that I don't remember being part of the ambiance of Mill Valley in the late 70s and in the 80s. People seem to be able at that time to just be more free-flowing and get together with their friends without conflicts and without any concerns about time.
And they could actually afford to buy their homes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and another thing, I'm thinking about the variety show that we did, which was really a wonderful event and grew to be a three-night event with 400 people each night. And it was a very, very exciting time. And we started that out as volunteers, and we all, just a whole group of friends and family, got together and as volunteers, and we'd put on skits about Mill Valley, and Rita Abrams was always a part of that, who'd written the Mill Valley song and is a very, very creative and talented person. And so we did that completely voluntarily for so many years, and I remember so many people had time to do things like that just for fun. And the reason we stopped doing it was because all of us became busier and busier and busier in our personal lives, just trying to make a living and, you know, just dealing with all of the responsibilities that we all eventually felt we couldn't manage the time anymore.
What about a reunion performance? Maybe at the theater on Throckmorton.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it's when David found out about the Throckmorton opening, he went and talked to Lucy and Danny, who were very about the idea of continuing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually, for a couple of years,
he kind of instigated
the initial part. He ran into some people downtown, and he kind of talked about it, and it did actually happen, and the host of the very first one was Mark Pitta, who now, and that, so that evolved into him doing the comedy night there, and so I don't know if he really even knows that connection, but I really feel like behind the scenes, David initiated a lot of that.
Well, I bumped into Chuck Eisler at the Depot, in the spring, and talked to him about missing the old Mill Valley variety show. Sometimes it was called the talent show.
We have videos of the whole thing. I mean, that probably should be in the library.
Oh. Yeah.
We have videos of and photographs of and we newspaper articles of that entire.
The history room would be interested in that.
Yeah.
So we should make copies, have copies made of all those videos.
And so Chuck got together with Danny Slomoff, and they agreed to assume the leadership of reviving the talent show, and it was a tremendous exertion. They did a wonderful job, got fantastic performing talent for Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday shows, and did that for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was revived with a great flourish.
And it always been a benefit for various. You know, organizations related to children.
Mm-hmm. But I guess one way of summing up the talent show was that when we did it in the earlier years in Mill Valley of our residency here, from I think 76 was the year when we first started it out, it was a wonderful mecca or gathering place for people to come and try to capture through skits and music and different kinds of performance styles, try to capture what the nature of Marin and Mill Valley life was like. And it was supposed to kind of represent all the different aspects of living here. And it was a celebration, really, and we all loved doing it. But we became, as Jackie said, too busy. And it became too demanding to repeat it continually year after year. Mm-hmm. But
and I also remember how it used to be second nature to me to organize social gatherings, and we always had something going on here, folk sings and music parties and just, you know, people here all the time. And it through the years, it's just become more and more difficult because everybody has such competing schedules, and to find a time that works for everybody, and
so
you know,
that
it's just
spontaneous events here aren't happening
as frequently.
And with the children gone too.
That's a big part of it too, because then it's figuring all of their schedules, and
but I do sense, you know, a tremendous dynamism and an energy and enthusiasm among parents who are active in the community with their kids in the schools, and for them perhaps there's the same amount of synergy and coming together and sharing and learning from each other and enthusiasm of collaboration, so forth. But
yeah, it's hard to tell which parts are just our stage of life and which parts are society and
right.
But it does seem, getting back to your comment, Bob, about the affordability or lack of affordability of housing, it does seem that in the late 70s and the 80s, it was possible for families to survive without chasing the dollar quite so much, without people could have a piece together part-time work in a couple of different areas and survive nicely.
When we first lived here, David was, as he said, working, commuting to San Francisco at the school where he had been teaching, Live Oak School. And then after that, we started doing family daycare so we could both be home with our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a license for 12 kids, and we had to count our own two as part of that 12. And we took care of kids here for many years. Many came from after school, from park school, or summer we'd have a preschool program or daycare. And so we did that for a number of years and somehow survived, charging a dollar an hour per child and, you know, just managed to live that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I got a job working for a nonprofit organization, which at that time was called Project Care for Children. Eventually it was changed to Marin Child Care Council. So I worked there for 12 years as doing support services and education and training for parents and child care providers.
And I should say also that Jackie is a marvelous artist, an amazing artist, and is an author, has written a couple of books, and is very, very creative in addition to being a very caring mom and a very caring grandma, and very helpful with all of our friends whenever they're in need as well. So she's very talented and also has a very giving and caring spirit. I wanted to describe a little bit about about my life in Mill Valley professionally in the 80s. I would have sort of a very mixed kind of a schedule where I might get up in the morning, go across the street and teach a guitar class at 8 a.m. At Park School, and then teach a couple of guitar lessons, and then do a soccer enrichment class at 2 o'clock for kindergarten and first graders at the different elementary schools. For a number of years, I was one of the music teachers for the Mill Valley schools. So in the 80s, I would go to the different elementary schools and teach music. And then after the enrichment class experience with soccer, I would go to the high school and coach at Tam High School. And I coached varsity girls and also Frosh Soft girls, and also the Frosh Soft boys team for about 14 years, approximately from about 1979 or 80 to 1992. And some pain from knee, from cartilage injuries with my right knee, caused me to have to stop coaching at Tam High School. I would have coached there forever otherwise. But my lifestyle was a mix of guitar lessons, music classes in the elementary schools, enrichment soccer classes, high school coaching, and then very often after the high school team, I would, if there was enough daylight left, I would coach one or two youth teams in the soccer league. So it was a rich with a lot of variety, and we could piece together a livelihood with lots of part-time work and have lots of wonderful social experiences in the process. So.
And Mill Valley had a lot to do with it, the type of community
yes.
it was.
Yes.
Let's wrap this up with you describing a little bit when you work with your youngest kids, at least you used to, you out on the soccer field somehow incorporated music into that
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a very unique approach. Can you
mm-hmm.
tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. Oh, thank you for asking. I never approached the mix of music and soccer as a tactical or strategic kind of process. I have always played guitar and sang for kids, and I've always loved to kick a ball around and teach soccer, and so it just seemed natural to try to create a class which was fun for kids to start out and learn the game. And with the youngest kids, we hope to convey a lot of special skills and basic technique in an atmosphere where kids are just moving a ball constantly and changing direction and trapping and passing and moving, punctuated by a funny song or some sort of goofy, silly story. I just try to have as much fun as I can with the kids. And in the process, they're moving constantly with the ball and learning a lot.
That class, I think, creates a lot of community, because for a lot of families, it's the very first time they've been out in a group with a lot of other parents and other children. And so I think singing together creates a lot of community feeling, and it's a very friendly, warm atmosphere where the parents all participate with their children. Mm-hmm. So they're not put in a competitive situation at all.
I didn't realize
time.
The parents. Of course, the youngest kids, the parents are
there
hanging out. One
yeah,
of my
right.
strengths in coaching
right.
was getting rid of the parents.
But
I could see where that would relax the child. And
The children don't play in games, competitive games with each other. They do skills and skill development and activities that with the parent with each child.
Did you used to help out with that too on the field?
Well, not on the field so much, as although I did have a short period of time where I was playing with the women's soccer groups, but no, more in the registration. I've been the kind of behind the scenes administrative person for a long, long time. I was.
So you held everything together and kept David behaving correctly.
I did my best.
Mentioning women's soccer, I want to digress just for a second to say that I taught a women's class through the Corte Madera Rec Department for a number of years, and in 1995, the class was taught with an effort to start a women's league, and the class grew from 12 to 15 to 20 to 30 to 40 to 50 to 60 to 70 to almost 80 participants who would come over to Corte Madera Town Park and have a game with their friends. And
they would divide up in groups, and there were people from 18 to mid-70s.
Yeah.
Mm.
And this class at the Corte Madera Town Park blossomed into the Women's Soccer League of Marin. The women that were in it got so inspired that they met and organized the Women's League. So that was when Jackie talked about her soccer experience with women. That was during that time. But I should also say that I do the soccer camps in the summer for kids from age 5 to 14, and I do the indoor league, and Jackie and I and our son Reed and Rachel are very,
very
active.
Very key people. Our son Reed, who's a musician and a math teacher, he's really kind of a math genius, and he manages to organize. We have about 1,800 kids in that league every year, and he organizes the entire schedule. And he organizes it taking into account everybody's individual needs and
Mission Impossible.
It is a Mission Impossible. I don't know that anybody could do it. I don't know that anybody else could do it. And he has a photographic memory, so he remembers every team from every previous year. So he's able to really, really do a great job of creating equitable playing situations. And the league is very focused on being recreational. We don't keep standings at all. And it's a really, really fun experience. People love it. I love it. I love going to as many games as I can. Mm-hmm. And so Reed does all of the scheduling and juggling things around. If he sees after the first couple of weeks there's inequity, he'll shift teams around and try to keep a balance. And then our daughter Rachel does all of the team placements of any of the kids who sign up. Kids can sign up either as a part of the team or individually, and we'll either create teams or place people on teams that don't have complete teams. And she works for us, year round, and that's during that time of year she does a lot of administrative work on that league. And also she's played a big role in involving Canal community and a lot of Spanish-speaking people, because she can speak Spanish, so she's able to really help. She's really helped grow the inclusion of people from other communities into the.
Yeah. And a lot of the Marin City kids are given some help with scholarships as well to enable anyone who wants to play in the program, whether they can afford it or not, enable them to participate. But one thing I wanted to say was that sometimes, because I have coached kids when they start out at the age of 3 or 4, parents remember that beginning, and I'm very determined to let the community know that the camps and the other programs are meant to be really the best quality we can offer for older kids as well, so that parents can relate to the programs which I'm offering as appropriate and developmental for the older kids too. I want to help the older kids as well. So, but it's a lot of fun. And you have done a wonderful job with the teams you've coached through the years, Bob.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun, too, and in a way it keeps us young. And we'll probably be both still out on the field in our 90s.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. I'm always in awe of how much energy and enthusiasm David has, and that it just goes on and on. Sometimes I call him the Energizer Bunny, because he just, he can still, with his aching knees, get out there and coach for hours and hours and hours with all the different ages and combining the music, which he just loves. I think he would volunteer and go around to schools and sing, he just has so much enthusiasm, and after all these years, he can still come home after teaching some of those peewee classes and tell me about every little cute child, and I have to come see this one and that one, and so.
But
and he's been doing a lot of things for Bread and Roses more recently.
Voluntary concerts.
Volunteering.
Great.
To
yeah.
go into yeah. preschools
well,
and
that,
hospitals.
That brings us back to our great community we live in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard as Jackie said, when you are getting older, it's hard to be able to look at your community knowing that you don't have kids in the schools and you're not drawn into the school communities as you were, or the league communities if you're somewhat independent from those. It's hard to look and see how similar or how different it is from Mill Valley in the late 70s or the 80s or early 90s. But to some degree, just the anxiousness and the stress which are manifest throughout the whole of society, including worry about the economy and so forth, these are all sort of contextual. They're all influencing our moods and our attitudes about life in Mill Valley. But to me, on the positive side, there's so many wonderful people in Mill Valley and so many people with a progressive social conscience, people that care about the underprivileged or minorities or
the world outside themselves
or the world beyond themselves. Mm-hmm. And so much also creative richness here. It's a mecca for artists and writers and painters and musicians and we have the beauty of the mountain and all the wonderful just all the wonderful environmental conditions of being in this beautiful place, which is near the bay and near the ocean. Mm-hmm. And not too far from the Sierras, and amidst so many wonderful people that I still feel, even though I'm tempted at times to move into a place, an area which is a little more rural, a little more layback, I still am amazed at Mill Valley. And I get up every morning around 5:30 or 6, very often go down to get a cappuccino or a cup of coffee and just appreciate how beautiful this place is, you know.
He's a regular downtown. Every morning, every single morning.
Good. Well, thank you so much for giving me your time to record your history in Mill Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really
thank
nice
you
experience.
So much.
We're at the age where we like to reminisce, so.
And thank you, Bob, for all the wonderful, wonderful things that you've done with all the teams you've coached and all the individual players who you've helped discover, whether it's been in soccer or lacrosse, whatever your sport is, you're a leader with the kids.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.